Oh, what I'd give for that wonderful phrase, to hear those three little words. That's all I'd live for the rest of my days. And what I...
Joining us now is Patricia T. O'Connor, the author of a number of books on language, and also scheduled to be speaking, signing copies of her books this evening at the Mid-Manhattan branch of the New York Public Library. That's at 40th Street and 5th Avenue. That'll be at 6:30. And she'll be talking about wordplay, the humorous use of language. So bring your favorite puns and plays on words. But we're going to be talking about some other things today, Pat.
Yeah, I particularly wanted to talk about a word that I just seem to be seeing everywhere, and in the last week or so, even it has. Well, the last month maybe, it's really just been in every story about any well-known person, any celebrity. You see this word "brand," and it's starting to seem to me that it's kind of losing its edge. At least I hope so, because I'm really tired of hearing it. But I'll give you...
But let me stop you for a second. As Jon Stewart often points out, or Stephen Colbert, words suddenly go through these little fads, and so suddenly everything is Barack Obama's Hurricane Katrina, that kind of thing. And everybody says the same thing.
Yes.
And you wonder whether there's any originality in the world. Is the same sort of thing happening with branding?
It may be. If so, we can blame the media, because that's where we find it all.
We're responsible for everything that goes wrong.
Not you. But I'll give you an example. Last month, Republican Congressman Jack Kingston of Georgia was asked by a reporter why his party thought it was necessary to shut down the government. He responded, "It was important to us to reestablish our brand as being against Obamacare." And when you really think about that, what does that mean? It's a way of camouflaging. Well, I won't, you know, you don't like, well, none of us likes political bashing on programs like this.
Of course,
but
we do.
They're not the only ones, though. The
Democrats, I'm sure Democrats
have
also
they
said
have their
something
brand.
About branding.
Right. Now, the word brand, it no longer means just a name or logo that identifies a company or product. It's jumped the corporate fence, and it seems to have gotten out of control. Today, celebrities are often referred to as brands, including artists, authors, chefs, architects, entertainers, and athletes. They've all been called brands. Now, just in recent weeks, for instance, I've read about Beyoncé becoming a global brand, about Oprah Winfrey, the fact that she's a brand, Madonna restoring her brand, tennis star Maria Sharapova building her brand. We read about the damage to the Lance Armstrong brand, the Paula Deen brand, the Miley Cyrus brand. It's just brand, brand, brand.
Sometimes it works the other way. Ford wants us to know that Rob Ford has nothing to do with its brand.
Oh, well, how can that be? They're stripping him of his name.
No, they just don't want people to think he's connected to the automotive company.
You see, they're not talking about the word Ford. They're talking about a public image. And, of course, you can't say, well, we don't want him to be associated with our public image. That wouldn't sound nice. Oh, or we don't, we're excluding him from our PR push. That wouldn't sound nice. But saying he's not part of our brand makes it sound sort of all right, mm-hmm. when really what they're doing is the same thing. They're all talking about public image.
So why do you think this has happened? It has to do with public image. Earlier words were words like spin, which seems to have lost its spin.
Right. I think that's why you don't hear spin anymore. It lost its shine. The polish went off it.
So now we're going to have brand doctors?
We've got those. Doctors have brands. Hospitals have brands. I've done a lot of research on this over the last week or so. Hospitals have brands. I found one website where a hospital had a website devoted entirely to its brand, and it was aimed mainly at its own employees and the kind of presence they were supposed to be putting forward in support of the brand. And I won't say which one. It's no reason to bash it, but they all do it, large and small, and not just in New York, but in small towns.
Well, in the past, supermarkets all had their store brands, and that was important to establish it. It also was connected to the image of the supermarket. Mm-hmm. You had either a high-quality store brand or a
less
expensive
one. Well, that's a little bit different thing,
but
though.
But it seems interesting to me now you would want the whole supermarket chain to have a brand that's separate from those other brands.
In other words, the brand doesn't just mean a name that you put on a product. It's more than that. It's the whole company. And everybody in it.
So how long do you think the brand is going to last?
Well, you never know. I would give it maybe another 5, maybe 10 years at the outside. I'm already pretty tired of it, but unless something else comes along, who knows? But this is a story I just found the other day. This was so telling. A recent story in the New York Times referred to the Kardashian brand. And it said that Kim Kardashian's brand may conflict with the brand of her boyfriend, Kanye West. Their brands are not in sync, although Kanye has publicly said, "I love her brand." Isn't it nice to be loved for your brand? Sort of sweet.
Cattle used to be branded.
Yes. And that,
I don't know if there's any connection there.
Oh, there is. There is indeed. The word brand... It's actually really, really old. It was it first showed up in writing in Beowulf in the 700s.
Really?
Yes, used in two different ways. It once had two kinds of meanings. One, it meant a fire. Two, it meant a glowing piece of wood lying in the flames. And out of that grew a sort of figurative meaning. The blade of a sword was called a brand. Probably because, one, it was tempered in fire, and two, it glowed. It had a flash to it, like fire.
And then, of course, you branded things, like you branded your cattle.
Yes, that came along later.
By using hot...
Yes, the brand, the use of brand, meaning to mark or to scar with a hot iron, came about originally in reference to the branding of prisoners in the 16th century. Later, it was used for the process of burning a brand onto an animal. But it wasn't until the 18th century that brand came to mean a mark put on a product, sometimes by burning, as in a cask of wine or lumber. Lumber from Sweden, say, would be branded with the name, the origin of the country on the end. And then it grew to mean a name on a product.
Well, welcome to the Pat O'Connor brand on the Leonard LoPage Show.
Oh, you're more of a brand than I am, I think.
We're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write us on our show page at WNYC.org. Before we get to the calls, brand is one of the hot words, but it's an old word.
Uh-huh.
Every year... we hear about new words of the year, and there's a whole bunch of new ones coming up, which have more to do with the new technology.
Yes, that's been true of the words of the year in recent years. They seem
like
to
app
have,
or
yes.
This year, it's one dictionary said selfie is the word of the year.
Yes, actually, Merriam-Webster announced its new words of the year, or not words of the year. I'm sorry, words that it was adding to its dictionary a couple of months ago, and now we're starting the season when dictionary companies and organizations like the American Dialect Society, notably, they were the originals, start naming what they think of as the words of the year. And the word of the year for Oxford Dictionaries, which is part of Oxford University Press, but it is not the OED, they have announced their word of the year is selfie. S-E-L-F-I-E, selfie.
Where you take a picture of yourself with your smartphone.
Right, and you generally post it to social media.
Well, let's take a little break, and when we come back, we'll find out what our listeners are thinking about. Our number is 212-433-9692. You can write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. We're back with Patricia T. O'Connor, author of a number of books on the English language and also a regular commentator on it in various publications and a regular visitor to our show as well. We're taking your calls at 212-433-9692, or you can write us on our show page at WNYC.org on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And let us go to Robert from Manhattan. Hi, Robert. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. Go ahead.
Couple of things. One, on the issue about the word, use of the word brand, it seems to me there's a very broad commercial, excuse me, a very broad cultural issue there, which is the commercialization of the culture and the commoditization of personality, where we're all now looking at ourselves as individual businesses with a brand that we can then market on the Internet.
Mm-hmm. True.
And that, to some degree, that was your point when you started this conversation.
Yeah, that is my point. Yes, yes. Instead of saying, here I am, Beyonce Knowles, a business, or Beyonce Inc., or Lance Armstrong and partners, I'm calling myself the Lance Armstrong brand. And by using the word brand that way, you give people the idea that you're using it figuratively. In fact, it's more literal than it appears to be.
There's an actor named Neville Brand. I wondered about the Neville Brand. But what about the word brand new? That doesn't mean the same thing. Brand new means newer than new.
Well, brand new, a lot of people think it means new enough to still have the label on, the brand. Not so. And there are some people who over the years have thought that it's actually bran, B-R-A-N, new, because new and fragile things were packed in bran, the hulls of grain. That's not true either. In fact, brand new is a very old expression. It comes from the original meaning of brand, the fire. Something brand new is new out of the flames, out of the furnace, just still glowing with newness. A piece of iron still aglow was brand new. Actually, Shakespeare used a variation on that phrase. He used fire new instead of brand new. It really was born in the 16th century. So actually, when Shakespeare was writing, it hadn't quite...
Well, since you've linked fire and brand.
Right. It's all
and
one
somebody
package.
Is a firebrand. But that's a whole other thing.
That's another firebrand. Also comes from that same expression, the burning. And also the drink brandy is also related.
Really?
Yes, brandy. We got that from the Dutch, actually. But it was originally called brandy because it was burnt. It was distilled. It was called brand or brandy wine. And later the wine part was dropped.
Although we still see the word brandy wine.
Yes, we do.
Let's take another call. This one is from Alan in Park Slope. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. I'm really enjoying this conversation because I guess I'd like to put in a good word for brand and branding. I teach, interestingly enough, marketing and branding at the City University of New York. And the way we define it has to do with the word promise, so that you promise to deliver a good or service, you promise to do it consistently, and you promise to do something that is unique or distinct from other brands, if you will. And the idea of a promise has to do with something that's very important, and that if you break a promise, you've done something fairly wrong. So to me, even though perhaps it's been overused, it does, I think, kind of capture in some way the brand essence or the essence of a company that does make it distinct. And if you violate that promise, whether you're a person or whether you're a company, bad things happen.
Yeah,
so
you've ruined your brand.
I'd be interested in your take on that.
well, what if? I mean, what you say would be true. Say a celebrity has a brand that he's promising to deliver something if he's a good guy. But what if his brand is that he's the bad guy? Say he's Mike Tyson. His brand isn't to
be. Well, it's funny.
Well, right now, Mike Tyson is presenting his brand as the good.
I chose the wrong example.
He was on our show recently.
Oh, was he?
Oh, boy, he regrets everything.
Oh, okay.
I mean, just a quick thought. I mean, Tom Hanks has a very particular reputation, but when he was, I guess, doing the show on Broadway about, was it Mike McCleary?
Yes.
No one thought he could do it because...
It's McAlary.
You might say his brand is, you know, that sort of soft-spoken, you know, caring guy, and he was able to kind of, you know, turn that on his head and obviously do very well. So, I mean, a person can have one, and I know it sounds a little silly at times, but in a way it's a word that kind of captures a lot. So, anyway, that's how I use it.
Okay, thank you for calling us. We go now to Emily in Parsippany. Hi, Emily.
Hi, I adore this segment, and I'm going to change the subject a little bit, but I have a brand new baby, and everyone says to me, oh, he's such a towhead, and I don't know what that means, and yesterday two of my friends and I were out to lunch, and each of us came up with a different theory of what it means, and I'm curious to know if any of us was right.
Well, doesn't towhead mean somebody is very light-haired?
Yeah, tow is an old word for straw or hay. So it meant he has straw-colored hair.
He does. He has very blonde hair. Somebody said something had something to do with potato skins or potato something.
Well, stranger things have happened, but not that I know of. But actually,
well, the
you know, you reminded
hay.
Me of a very funny a typo that I once saw where a little tyke was described as being two-headed. T-W-O. Two-headed, a cute little two-headed tyke instead of toe-headed.
Well, I saw somebody spell toe-head T-O-E, which is
toe-head.
Very weird.
Like he has a foot growing out of his ears. Okay.
That's what I thought. I thought it was like his head looked like someone's big toe.
Well, you've got it nailed.
Uh-oh.
Thank you so much for taking my
call. Call the kid Pinky. Okay, let's go to Samantha from Edison, New Jersey. Hi. How you doing?
Hi there. I'm doing well, thanks. I was calling because coincidentally I just picked up a book. I'm conducting a job search right now, and I'm a fan of the woman who wrote French Women Don't Get Fat. And she wrote a book more recently that people said she should call French Women Don't Get Fired, but she calls it Women, Work, and the Art of Savoir-Faire. And I think it was published, it looks like, in 2009. And she very explicitly pushes this idea. She has a whole section I just read about being your own brand. And so that's what she advises young women in the workplace to do. And she says that being a brand consists of having serious hair, presentable shoes, not too much makeup, and distinctive jewelry.
Yeah, I don't see the difference between brand and public image.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's a fancier word for that, how you present yourself and what people think of you. That's your brand.
Jay from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I was just wondering what your philologist has to say about the disappearance of the comparative forms of adjectives. I heard our former president, Mr. Bush, say that he was more proud of something than he was of something else, rather than prouder. And I thought, my God, you know, this guy went to Yale. What is he talking about?
Well, he was just appreciated there.
Yeah, it was misunderappreciated.
Yeah. Well, the fact is, you know, I hear this going on all the time, even with announcers on NPR. They, instead of saying using, you know, comparative forms of adjectives, they say more this and most that, like more well-known instead of better known, or most well-known instead of best-known. I mean, do you think there's some sort of drift, some sort of change taking place in the language?
I don't think so. This is a very old tendency, and it often happens with the kind of words you're talking about that don't have the classical ER formations for comparatives and EST for superlatives. For instance, the person has the phrase well-known in mind. He doesn't have good-known in mind. So he says more well-known rather than better-known.
By the way, that one doesn't bother me as much as some do.
Yeah, there are like he runs more faster than the other guy. That
or even
the piling
more fast.
Up of comparatives, or
more
fast.
More fast.
Right, when we have a perfectly good comparative, faster. I don't know that this is a big drift. It's always been going on. It may be that you're when you noticed Bush's tendency to do that, you started seeing it everywhere, hearing it everywhere.
Well, he's revealed his talent as an artist on the Jay Leno show. And while Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton are trying to save the world, mm-hmm. he's trying to figure out how to draw. So I don't know what that says about his presidency. Uh-huh. But Pam from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hi. My question is about the word entitled.
Uh-huh.
I asked somebody to help me move a mobility scooter into my trunk, and I said, excuse me, could you help me load this scooter in? It weighs about 50 pounds.
Uh-huh.
And he walked away and said no, and then he shrugged and came back and he said, all right, I'll help you. I just didn't like the way you asked. You sounded so entitled.
Well, maybe he thought that you were acting as though you were assuming that he would do it.
I've asked this about 1,000 times, and I've always had positive responses. And I wouldn't be stuck on this word, except it also happened to a friend of mine. We're both pushing 60. And these are
I am too, but from the other direction. Well, entitled basically just means to first of all, to give a name to something, but also to claim a right to something. So it may
that's
be
where
that,
entitlement comes from.
Yes. So if you have a right to something, you are entitled to it. So maybe he felt that you were not asking him nicely enough.
A lot of people have objected to the word entitlement describing Social Security.
Right,
and,
as if it's a bad
Medicare.
Word. And it's not a bad word. It means that you have a right to something, you have a valid claim. So I don't know. It may just have been the attitude of these people.
Yeah, he may have felt there was a class thing going on there. She felt she was coming across as a little superior mm-hmm. or expecting other people to help.
Right.
He probably had a chip on his shoulder.
Could be.
We have a call from Bob from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. I'm in the textile business, and TOW means T-O-W means something to us also. It's typically a thick rope of unbroken fiber that is then broken into staple, which is a short version of it, through a toe-to-top conversion, T-O-P. And once it becomes staple, you can spin it into a yarn. I'm in the yarn business myself.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it might come from the
okay,
straw.
What about that word
like
yarn?
Flex. Oh, yarn.
Yes, and of course spinning means something completely different to us than it does to you.
Uh-huh. Well, I wonder if the yarn that means a story came from the spinning of the... I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Well, they say he spun a yarn.
Yep, exactly. So toe-to-top conversion, yarn spinning, and staple. Those are all some terms you can learn today.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. Good
but in the case of spinning a yarn, don't you think, Pat, that we're really talking metaphorically?
Yes. Yes.
And there
but
are some...
a lot of figurative language. Well, a lot of our language began figuratively, and we now take it for granted that that's its original meaning. Like loophole. People think that there was maybe a loop of rope or something. Actually, a loophole was a hole for looking through, a loop from a Dutch word meaning to look through. It was a little slit in a castle wall that you could shoot arrows through or spy on people.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
but
I didn't
you
know
it have the loop.
I read it in Walter Scott, and he was describing a castle, and it had loopholes, and I thought, Eureka!
John from Croton on the Hudson, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. It seems to me that we're making a lot of discussion about the word brand when it really has just become a substitute for the word identity.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to talk a lot about the identity of celebrity or even of a product.
Well, I think there's a little bit of difference between identity and image. Which a brand is more like the image of something. What crops up in the consumer's mind when he hears that name, Kardashian or a Campbell Soup or whatever it is? And I think the identity may be actually more like the reality of it.
Well, we talked about product identity.
Uh-huh.
And I guess branding.
Right. Well, again, and a brand does identify something. So you're probably right. This is kind of a circular argument, I suppose.
Susan left a comment on our show page. She says, at a recent symposium of new entrepreneurs in Brooklyn, they spoke of the increased viability of promoting their products because the Brooklyn brand is now recognized both nationally and worldwide.
Oh, yeah, it's true. Brooklyn is a huge brand.
I was in Seattle, and there was
Europe.
A store that was called Brooklyn Clothes.
Uh-huh.
And I said, anybody here from Brooklyn? And they said, no, but we like the name.
Yeah, well, it's very popular among the Swedes, but all over Europe. And the Parisians use the phrase, Très Brooklyn, to mean very hip. Something is Très Brooklyn.
Well, that's why I live there. Pat will be speaking and signing books, or books?
All the books.
At the Mid-Manhattan branch of the New York Public Library. That's at 40th Street and 5th Avenue. And you can join her at 6:30. This is this evening, when she talks about wordplay, the humorous use of language. You can bring along your favorite puns and plays on words. You can also reach her directly on email at mailbox@gramophobia.com. And at gramophobia.com, you can click on Pat's blog to see a selection of language questions from WNYC listeners. She's going to be back with us on January 15th. And, Pat, it's always a pleasure to have you here.
Well, it's a pleasure for me, too.
So tune in on January 15th with your new language question.